Monster Man and Wife, episode 189, Dinosaurs.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
Today's episode is the second episode of our occasional series of Monster Man and Wife specials, and it is occasioned by the fact that, now that we are doing Monster Manual 2, the 1983 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition, we have another dinosaur section. And this leads me to an important question for my lovely wife, Allison. You like a talk of dino?
I like a talk of dino.
I like a talk of dino.
Let's talk a dino.
All right. We have in front of us the dinosaur section of Monster Manual 2, and we are probably not going to get through each of these dinosaurs in detail because there are 19 of them, which is a lot, but not as many as there were in the first Monster Manual, where I think there were 28.
I would just like to point out here that I have not even looked at this section. I have it closed on my finger in front of me. I don't want to spoil myself or you, the readers, about what it's going to be like.
You are the reader.
Well, hopefully we have some people reading along.
No. Oh, that's true. Okay. Very true. All right. No, you got me there. All right. So yeah, let's get a first impression. So go ahead and open up Monster Manual 2 to the dinosaur section and let's see what we got. Now, I should note that I think this section is illustrated by Jim Holloway. No relation.
I know. Here we go.
So what do you notice about the dinosaurs on page 51?
Well, they have very good faces.
They do. Well, that's Holloway.
In fact, they have very similar expressions. They're all very alert, but also perhaps wistful.
Now, what about Dacen Turris?
Oh, he doesn't have a face at all.
No, and it's really weird. If you're looking at it, it very much looks like there's a missing illustration from that space, right?
And
if
perhaps it's invisible.
Well, there'd be a lot of invisible dinosaurs if that's the case. Go ahead and just look through the rest of the
Invisillustration. Oh no, there's so many invisible dinosaurs here. Very exciting. Oh, look, Dimetrodon is so happy.
Yeah, he's got a real good attitude.
You should put that on your Instagram.
Maybe. I don't update my Instagram as often as I should.
I agree. That's why I said you should put it on there. And there's a pterosaur, comma giant.
Yep.
And there's a wiggly boy. This is great. I want them all to be my friends.
Yeah, and it does actually say at the beginning, it's very clear that they are not all actually dinosaurs. It just says that they fit into the kind of lost world setting that you might encounter dinosaurs in. And in fact, you know, I was thinking about this today. So Land of the Lost, it was on in the 70s, but it was in syndication until like 1987.
Yeah, I certainly watched it.
Yeah, I watched it too. Although I don't remember anything about it, except the theme song. When you combine this and the Monster Manual 1, together with the various other prehistoric animals that are in these books, you actually, you know, you have 50 some odd monsters plus whatever lizard men and troglodytes you want to add to the thing. So this really, it almost is enough monsters to just run an entirely prehistoric campaign, and that seems to be almost what they're aiming for.
I don't know why you haven't done that for me, and in fact I suddenly feel very betrayed.
I also don't know why I haven't done it. Partly it's because,
and
like,
for other people, I'm sure.
Yeah. Partly it's because as we go through this section, you'll find that there's kind of a lot of repetition. Like, it makes a big point out of how stupid some of them are, which
stupid,
is...
Stupid dinosaur!
Yeah, it is kind of like, in the introduction it says, like, all of these creatures are extremely stupid.
These reptiles.
All of these reptiles.
Are, well, extremely stupid.
And it's interesting how much our perception of dinosaurs has changed. Obviously, none of these are depicted as feathered, even though I believe that we think that, like, the Struthiomimus... like I said, there were 19 entries in this section, and I don't know that it's really feasible to go through all of them, but I have written down one fact about each of these 19 creatures, and I thought that that would be the easiest way to do it, right? It's just to kind of go through them and talk about them, like, individually. So first up, we have Ankylosaurus.
Another invisible dinosaur.
Another invisible dinosaur, not to be confused with Ankylosaurus, and in fact...
No, obviously.
The best dinosaur.
The best dinosaur.
This is probably a typo for Ankylosaurus with a CH. The most interesting thing I could find out about Ankylosaurus is that the type fossil for this... I think there's more than one kind of Ankylosaurus, was discovered while excavating a well with gunpowder, which I just, you know, I'm sure, like, Isn't that weird?
Oh, the 20th century.
Yeah, or I think it was even earlier than that. I think it was the 19th century. They were just like...
Oh, the 19th century.
Yeah. I mean,
it's true. There was a lot of... It's very Wild West plus dinosaurs. Why haven't you run that campaign?
Yeah, that's true. There's even a game about that, Bronchosaurus Rex. And then similarly, like if you look at Camptosaurus, which has a bit of a gormless expression, but...
It's not gormless. That's grumpy.
But look at the entry for it. Like, look at what it says about it.
Oh, slow, exceptionally stupid.
Right. So, like...
So, it's even more stupid than the rest of the dinosaurs.
Who are already extremely stupid.
Extremely stupid. So, stupid, stupid dinosaurs.
So, I read, like, the Wikipedia entry for Camptosaurus, and I could not figure out why they had decided to single this animal out as being extremely stupid. Like, it's just...
They are typically too stupid to run.
Yeah, that's pretty stupid.
Until one of their number is killed.
Next up on our list, we have the Compsognathus. Now, I feel like Compsognathus got a lot more prominence after...
Jurassic Park?
Right, yeah, because they're in Jurassic Park. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to me how much Jurassic Park matters, because what's not in either of these dinosaur sections?
Velociraptors.
No velociraptors. And, like, today you couldn't... I mean, there's the Deinonychus, which is essentially a member of that type of dinosaur, right? Like a fast-moving predator. But to not...
Not according to this illustration.
Well, no. But to not have a raptor feels real weird in the modern day. And that's all down to Jurassic Park, I think.
But this one looks like... It looks a little bit like the velociraptors of the film, like in its sort of like dynamic illustration. It's like wary gaze, almost sinister looking.
But it's much smaller, although obviously you can't get that from the illustration, but it's size S. Now the next one is the Dacentaurus or Dacentaurus. Now the interesting thing about this one to me is that it's basically just a Stegosaurus.
But extra.
Yeah, but with more points on him. And that's also true of another later entry, the Kentrosaurus. And the Dacentaurus name literally means tail full of points.
Okay, new second favorite dinosaur.
And the spikes on its tail may have been arranged into a thagomizer. Are you familiar with the thagomizer?
Please tell me.
So there's a Far Side cartoon from 1982.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that shows a caveman. God,
the Far Side.
Like giving a lecture, and he's pointing to the spikes on the Stegosaurus' tail, and he says, "This is the thagomizer, named after the late Thag Simmons." But that is actually what paleontologists call the arrangement of spikes on the Stegosaurus' tail, is a thagomizer now. The Natural History Museum does in fact use the term thagomizer to describe it. Yeah, after the late Thag Simmons.
Now, when I were young,
everybody
loved either the Tyrannosaur or the Stegosaur.
Really? They're not Triceratops?
You got a couple, but honestly, those were the two faves.
Huh. That's interesting. There's a book called Dinomania by Boreas Sachs that I was reading when we were in the U.S. the last time we were there. And it says that, like, the two iconic dinosaurs are the T-Rex, of course, and the Triceratops. Like, everywhere you go, there's this image of, like...
Yeah, of those two faced off against each other. That's true. But those aren't the ones that kids love. Hmm. I mean, well, the Triceratops is not the one that the kids love. They love that spiky Stegosaur.
Yeah. That's just fun to imagine, like, you bashing things with your tail. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it happens to me all the time.
Yeah. So that next up we have Deinonychus. And I think that Deinonychus is a very popular one because of its cool... claws. But look at the beginning of the entry and what it says about the Deinonychus. Maybe it's not...
Grasping forearms?
Maybe it's not at the beginning. It's just somewhere in there. It says it could be mistaken for relatively harmless creatures.
Oh, yeah. At the very end it says that.
Okay.
I mean...
By whom?
From that illustration? Maybe, like, if you were just looking at his face.
I'm going to make the noise. I'm not so sure about that, but...
If you were just looking at the face, you'd be like, oh, that's a friend.
Yeah, maybe. All right. Next up, we have the Dilophosaurus. No illustration, which is a shame because the visual aspect of this kind of the only really interesting thing about the Dilophosaurus.
The weak skull?
Yeah. When I was reading up on the Dilophosaurus, that mentioned its skull being kind of delicate. So that was a bit weird. Like, it does, you know, like not...
Like a baby.
I guess, like, maybe that, or, you know, they tell how kind of, like, powerful something's bite was by the bone points that the muscles anchor to, so I guess maybe the argument was that, you know, that this suggests that it didn't have a very powerful bite or something, and it probably had dual crests on its head, a bit like a cassowary.
But gently.
Yeah, gentle dual crest. I don't know. It's an early large predator, so I guess maybe the idea is that, like, later...
The more you bonk your head against something to kill it, the harder your head gets.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's just evolution.
Yeah, that's just science. Then we have the Dimetrodon.
I thought you were going to make fun of his beautiful expression.
I love his expression. He's just like, hi folks, it's me, Dimetrodon. Anyway, so yeah, my notes for Dimetrodon just say, Dimetrodon! Like, he's one of the ones that you would know, right? Like, on this list, like, I think, like, most kids know Deinonychus and most kids know Dimetrodon. And very few people know Euparkyria, who's also not a dinosaur. And...
Aww.
Yeah, it's sort of
it's
like
stripy.
It's like an early relative of the dinosaurs. I think that's right. But in particular, like I was trying to figure out what the name meant because "eu" is a prefix that means good,
mm-hmm.
right? Like euphoria or euphemism. And so Euparkyria literally means Parker's good animal.
Oh yes,
isn't that an amazing name? It's just like name. That's my animal. You know, it's pretty good. It's my good animal. I love the name Parker's Good Animal. I have no idea what you would use a Euparkyria for in your campaign. And that's true of a lot of these dinosaurs. Yeah, there's just kind of like a lot of minor pack hunters that won't attack you unless you're wounded in this section. Like a lot.
But I don't know if you've know this about D&D, but people get wounded a lot. Like, they're a sort of, like, wandering monster kind of thing.
I get that. But, I guess what they're going for is kind of like a jungle survival game where you know, like, maybe you've been, like, stranded in the past or something like that. Or on some, like, Arthur Conan Doyle Lost World kind of plateau or something. And so you just have to sort of survive. And, you know, you're running out of rations and someone gets hit. And you can hear the Euparkyria is, like, slithering around the... Yeah. Bushes, yeah. Kentrosaurus, again, another stegosaurus-like thing. But interestingly, sort of the most notable feature of the Kentrosaurus isn't represented here, which are the long rear curving spikes on its shoulders. Like its front shoulders, it has two...
Not really obvious there.
They kind of imagine that it could sort of slam its shoulder into you sideways and give you a poke.
Stab you up.
I don't otherwise have a good piece of Kentrosaurus trivia. The other thing that's going to turn up a lot in this section is there are a lot of creatures in here that are known for their exceptionally long necks. And that is true of our next entry, Mamenchisaurus. Because the first Mamenchisaurus species was discovered during construction work, it is called Mamenchisaurus constructus.
You know what I want to see from all these long-necked dinosaurs?
What?
Giraffe neck fights.
I mean, that probably did 35 happen.
35-foot long neck.
Yeah. That probably did happen. And that's actually... There's really interesting, like, the reconstruction of it. They showed, like, an image of it, and it looks so weird. The next one, Massopondylus. This is a typo. The actual animal is called Massospondylus. Again, I don't have too much to say about it. I think there it says defensive biting.
Yes. This seemingly peaceful herbivore has long, sharp teeth for defensive biting. But it's also... stupid.
It really talks about how stupid they are in all of them. But like defensive biting just sounds so weird. Like when you start to like confront Massospondylus about its behavior, like it bites you. You know? It also had thumb claws and there's some speculation that it had air sacs under its skin so that it could like puff itself up like a bird.
Cute.
I know.
Speaking of being defensive with its biting, it also says that any movement towards it from a strange creature could be taken as an attack, which is, you know, you're defensive,
certainly very defensive.
Yeah.
Then we have an aquatic creature, the Nothosaurus. So the Nothosaurus is believed to have kind of lived both in and out of the water, like a bit like a seal, if a seal were 4 to 7 meters long. And actually, I wrote that note, a seal... if it were 4 to 7 meters long. And then I was like, actually, how big is a walrus?
Yeah.
And a Pacific walrus can get up to about 5 meters long. So actually, it's sort of...
They're not small.
It's basically kind of a...
But thinner and more dinosaurish.
Yeah, no, definitely. But, you know, just kind of there to be in the water if the PCs come plummeting out of their time portal into the warm seas of the whatever period.
This is another happy dino.
Yeah, it's got a great... It's just like, oh, hey, I'm here on the beach. Life is good. Then we get Ornitholestes, a name which literally means bird robber.
I remember these or things like these in like dinosaur animation, like school animations a lot. The ones that would steal the eggs of the bigger dinosaurs.
And there are a lot of dinosaurs that have, or at least two, that have names that mean something like that. Because Oviraptor means egg thief. Like, and again, they're small, they're fast, they eat eggs. They're not a threat. They're just kind of like, again, this sort of feels like a lot of these lesser dinosaurs are included in here because you're stranded in the lost world and you have to find something to eat. Yeah, or they might like creep into your camp and try to steal your supplies.
Like your eggs?
Like, indeed, your eggs. Then we get a giant bird, Phororhacos. They're normally called, today, Phororhacos. So they're slightly differently spelled. I believe the largest species of them is Phororhacos longissimus. The longest Phororhacos,
oh,
or
yes,
the very long Phororhacos. I think these guys are cool. I actually like big flightless birds as a monster. Mm. What?
Those things can F you up proper.
What Ray Harryhausen movie? Is it a baby rock in Sinbad? Or
I
is
think
it
might be.
Or is it The Mysterious Island? Like, I don't know, but there's definitely a Ray Harryhausen movie that has a big bird in it.
And it Fs them up proper.
Yeah, and there's just something about, like, the herky-jerky mm-hmm. motion of the stop motion that, like, works with the way a bird walks,
yeah.
I guess.
Anyway, this one looks awfully proud of itself.
Yeah.
Well, as it might.
Yeah, it's strutting because it's, you know, it's a bird.
It's the cock of the walk, as it were.
Yeah, indeed. Then we have Podokesaurus. It literally means the swift-footed lizard. Podokes, I don't speak ancient Greek. That's what Homer is always calling Achilles, swift-footed Achilles.
They usually attack first.
Yeah, right, because they're so fast. They're followed up by the giant pterosaur. Now, pterosaurs actually could get pretty big. Probably, like, the one that most people would say are the biggest, Quetzalcoatlus northropi, had a wingspan of probably around 12 meters.
What I'm going to say about this is that the first sentence is so rude. This ghastly-looking creature with a 10-foot-long snake-like neck and long jaws is a nightmare to behold. Total slam on pterosaurs right out of nowhere.
Yeah, particularly considering, like, some of the ugly customers they've had so far, it's weird that they single out the pterosaur. Like, again, they kind of can't decide whether they're like, oh, look at these primitive brutes, or dinosaurs are so cool.
They look like, this one looks like a Skeksis.
It does, yeah. I mean, maybe.
Delightfully.
Maybe they went off the illustrations.
Good job, Holloway.
Thank you. It's followed up by Struthiomimus, which, again, another one of the ones that I had actually heard of, a name which literally means ostrich imitator.
I'm really disappointed that you continued, because I was going to make a joke about, like, Struth, it's a mime.
Oh, sorry.
Are you?
No.
Okay. Anyway, go on.
Again, these are dinosaurs that I think today we think were probably feathered. I mean, I don't really have anything interesting to say about these guys.
It has to be really hungry to attack men. But anything smaller, like any smaller humanoids, like, for example, a halfling,
yeah,
might get chased after.
I do love
which
that.
Which is adorable.
Yeah, I love the idea that it's just kind of like, oh, yeah, well, that's a person. But a halfling is basically just like, you know, it's like a dog or a pig. It would definitely go after one of those. That's pretty adorable. I love the idea of the halfling, like, running through, you know, all these, like...
The long grass that it prefers.
Predators just think of it as, like, a prey animal.
They do probably taste delicious because they can cook so well.
Then we got, that's true, they eat well. Then we got Tanistropheus, another animal with a very long neck. In fact, this is one of the, like, longest necks of prehistory. It says there it's as long as the rest of its body. It's actually, it could be longer.
Wow.
Its neck is longer than
cartilage.
Its body and its tail put together.
That's a good illustration for that.
Yeah, that really looks kind of snake-like in
the
illustration.
But with some legs put on.
Yeah, and I feel like here this kind of works because there's always this question of dinosaurs, like, what are you doing here, right? Because dinosaurs are imposing to us as modern day people because they're, like, big and fierce and prehistoric.
But everything was.
Yeah, wow. And they're not exceptional in a Dungeons & Dragons world, right? Which is full of owlbears and dragons and I mean, if it is.
An owlbear is not as large as most dinosaurs, James.
Yeah,
nice
but
try.
It's bigger
Mine
than, like,
better.
Podokesaurus or Ornitholestes or, you know what I mean? Like, there's nothing about Ornitholestes that is not also true of a jackal or a coyote or even a fox.
Dinosaurs are cooler.
Right. And it's really interesting because this is something that works because they're cool to the players rather than because they have any particular significance to the characters.
The characters would probably understand that dinosaurs are cooler. It's just an objective thing.
Maybe, but my point is that then they include stuff like Tanistropheus, which doesn't have the recognition factor. Like, you see a T-Rex, you're like, oh crap, it's a T-Rex. You see Tanistropheus, and you're like, oh, that's like a sea serpent. What I mean to say is that basically, like, that could be, like if you told someone that was a fantastic creature that was made up for this game,
easily.
People would believe it, yeah.
Yeah.
But the
fact that it's a dinosaur makes it cool.
I agree. I just think it's an interesting look at the kind of melange of influences that is such an important part of D&D.
Agreed.
Finally, we got Pteranodontosaurus. This is a typo for Temminodontosaurus with an M, which means cutting-toothed lizard. It's an ichthyosaur, obviously. It's one of the largest ichthyosaurs, reaching lengths of 9 to 12 meters. So it's a big, aggressive water monster, and stay out of the oceans of the prehistoric period, kids. So there are a lot of dinosaurs in this thing. Like, there are as... I haven't stacked them up against devils and demons, but there's kind of, like, almost the same, probably more dinosaurs in terms of number, even though their entries aren't as long.
No, this is one versus six, for example.
Yeah, no, true. It took me six episodes to get through devils alone, yeah. But, like, we said last time that it was interesting how D&D was kind of trying to support multiple sort of campaign styles. Like, you almost expect that there would be a campaign where it's just dinosaurs. And... There's in 1981, Isle of Dread comes out, and it's got tons of dinosaurs in it. So I wonder if this is a follow-on from that, maybe. I don't know if any of these creatures first appeared in Isle of Dread. I know that some of my listeners would know the answer to that question. But I don't regret the inclusion of a load of dinosaurs, not And Still Keep Your Love. But it's an interesting question to me. Like, sometimes I want to hear from the DM out there who put Podokesaurus into the game. You know what I mean? Like, how... That there must be, among these books, monsters that have just never been in anyone's campaign. That nobody went, you know what we want, Mamenchisaurus. It's like a Brontosaurus, but nobody's ever heard of it. Obviously, things wouldn't be for Isle of Dread directly, because that's a different game. Isle of Dread is D&D. This is AD&D.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. My point is basically just that, I do wonder if some of these big sections, like, nobody's ever used one. Who did a big devilly campaign and was like, yeah, Hootagin, that guy's going on the list. Bale, who cares? Hootagin's my man.
I bet there are people out there.
Yeah, that's true. If you think about how popular D&D was in the 80s, then there must have been so many campaigns that ultimately somebody must have had a Mamenchisaurus. And if that somebody was you, I'd like to hear about it.
Me too, please.
So I think that about wraps it up. We're way over time for this episode of Monster Man and Wife. But don't worry, the next episode's going to be real short. Well, it's both going to be just me, and it's going to be real short, because it's only got one monster. That's the Dracolisk. And I'm going to be talking about that next episode on Monster Man, a show about monsters.
Because monsters are great.
Thank you for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.